Okay, let's get this thing started.
I'm just a girl in love.
La la la, lovey dove.
I can't be held responsible for my actions.
She's an ingenue.
I have no underlying issues to address. I'm certifiably cute and adorably obsessed.
They say love makes you crazy, therefore you can't call her crazy. 'Cause when you call her crazy, you're just calling her in love.
Blam!
Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me tonight, the stringer bell to my Avon, is one of our resident STVD All-Star Squad members, Jason. Welcome aboard, Jason.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here again talking about the crazy ex-girlfriend.
That's right. We are here tonight to bring you, our lovely listeners, all five of you, the second of our planned three podcasts on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. We did choose to spare you guys from singing the opening like we did last time. Because we just realized we couldn't even get the do-do-do-do-do part right. I don't even want to think about how bad our version of that song might have been, quite frankly.
No, I did have a lot of fun singing it last time, though. That was a lot of fun. Took a lot of work to get it right, but it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah, I listened to it a few more times. Well, not a few times. Twice earlier today, because I was wondering about some other stuff we did in that podcast. And I was kind of cringing at hearing my voice there. Although I'm a whiz with certain songs at karaoke, I wouldn't have chosen this one for me at karaoke. Put it that one. Okay, yeah. So... like you said, we are here to talk about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which actually, I think within the last few days, got word they were renewed for a third season. So, yay, we're getting another season of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, at least one more.
At least one more. You know, hey, some shows like This Is Us get lucky and they find out they get renewed for two more seasons. But that's extremely unusual. I've rarely heard of a show getting a commitment for more than one season beyond where it is. So let's just be happy, because for a while there, this was one of those CW shows that was kind of on the bubble as far as ratings were concerned and whether they would bring it back. I doubt it's a very cheap show to make because of just the musical numbers alone. And, you know, when you get pushed to Friday, that's usually like... maybe not the best of time slots in this day and age, but I kind of think also, going along with the whole day and age thing, I don't know how much days and time slots mean anymore because of how many people watch things in so many different ways.
That's true. And the ratings for the show has not been where it is for the first season, so there was cause for concern.
Yeah. Clearly being shoved over to Fridays at 9 is not great, especially for a show that has definite youth appeal. I mean, the shows that do quote-unquote well Friday nights tend to be the older skewing shows on CBS, like your Blue Bloods or your Y5Os and things of that nature. It's one of those interesting things. I'm a TV guy. I've been a TV guy for more than half my life, so I can tell you that once upon a time, Friday night was considered like the hot night in TV. It was where the youngins were watching. I mean, sure, yeah. Dallas was on Friday nights, but guess what? Originally, before it moved to Sunday, The X-Files was on Friday nights. Miami Vice was on Friday nights. You had all these, the more newer, vibrant, younger skewing shows in the 80s and 90s were on Friday nights. But at some point, it became kind of like, oh, no, because that's when we go out, you know? And, you know, although I keep saying, yeah, but with DVRs and everything else, and now with people watching online or different apps or whatever, I don't know how much it means anymore, other than the fact that TV advertisers still use the day of or day plus three as their main source of tracking revenue as far as how much they're going to pay for those ads. So ratings are still important if you're on network TV, essentially, basically. Big news flash. Anyway. Rachel Bloom has been making the rounds over the past week or so. She was on a late show with Stephen Colbert earlier this week. Did you see that?
I did not, but I assure she killed it, because she's very light on her feet in terms of her improv and the way that she can just think off the cuff.
it was an interesting episode of the Colbert Show because all three people were kind of entertaining. But she, to have her on, she was like the middle guest, and just before her was I'm going to mess up her name just the way John Travolta did a couple years ago. The famous singer from Frozen.
Idina Menzel.
Thank you, because I know I would mess that up.
Yeah, you got to let that go.
Yeah, I'll let you take care of that one. I just thought it was funny that she was on the same show as Rachel Bloom. I kept thinking if they were backstage and she showed up, I was like, hey, do you ever want to, you spent all that time on a crap like Glee. Do you ever want to show up on my show and sing like a really funny song? But and also someone on our Facebook page, I think it was Matt Triest, had posted a link that she was on an NPR podcast. It was like a little 15-minute podcast I listened to earlier today, which was very good. Did you listen to that?
No. Well, you know what's funny? You know what's funny? If, you know, just blue sky thinking, if we get someone from the show, who do you think we'd get on this podcast? Well, we'd get like one of the bit players, right?
yeah, we're not going to get her.
Like Maya.
I think
what's his name? Trevor?
Trent, you mean?
Trent would be
a great get. Hey, you know what? I would shoot the moon, and maybe somehow we might be able to land the actress who plays Paula.
Oh yeah, I like her.
Only because she's actually responded to a couple of tweets that I've done when about the podcast about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and actually actually responded. That doesn't really mean much of anything, but it's kind of cool. So, you know, but yeah, it would probably be someone, you know, if we got Maya, I'd be thrilled because I think she's so cute, but, yeah. You know, whatever. I'll take the guy taking sandwich orders for them right now. Okay. So since we're talking about the show, we should start talking about the last five episodes. Because in our first podcast, we covered 1 through 5 this season. So this podcast, we're planning to cover episodes 2.6 through 2.10. And then we will finish up with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, I'm guessing in about 2 or 3 weeks after they've done their finale. Because it's just a 13-episode season, correct?
Yeah, I think February 3rd is the last episode of this year.
So we'll record the final podcast for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend at some point shortly after that. So, without any further rambling and whatever else we're doing here, let's get to the first episode. And that episode's title was, Who Needs Josh When You Have a Girl Group?
Period sex, put down a towel, pot it till it's dry with some period sex. Period sex.
Stop it. Now, I'm not going to do an entire recap kind of thing like some people know we do for other shows that we talk about on the podcast. I actually don't remember how we did this last time around. Did I do like a really tiny quick synopsis for each episode? I don't really remember. It's been a couple of months, but I totally forgot.
I think it was just a quick synopsis.
Okay, you know, I'll basically do what I call the Wikipedia synopsis, which is really just me cutting and pasting from Wikipedia and, you know, either rephrasing it or just saying what they said. Basically, this is the episode where Rebecca tries to get Paula to join the new girl group that's formed between her, Heather, and Valencia. Meanwhile, speaking of groups, Trent is trying to get in with Josh's guy group of Josh, White Josh, and Hector.
Hector.
And also, speaking of friends, we get this whole situation of a new friendship between Daryl and the aforementioned Maya. So, okay, so that's a quick and easy synopsis, right? Let me start right off about this episode. Something I just want to say. For me, I think this might have one of the single best, you know, single episode guest appearances that we've had. Bringing back Paul, the actor, I'll look up his name, Paul Welch, as Trent, especially because I don't remember really liking his character all that much when he appeared last season, but oh my, he pulls off a real tour de force in this episode. I mean, between his singing and the humor, and it being mildly sociopathic.
Mildly, that's putting it mildly.
Well, considering our main character, is there really that much difference between these two if you really think about it? I mean, this is the woman who gave up her life in New York and went across country, et cetera, et cetera.
And it's also, not just that. It's the spending the insane amount of money just to try to get in with the guy group, which is the same thing that Rebecca did as well.
Well, Rebecca showed throughout last season where they even made fun of it at a certain point. And again, this season, she seems to not have much of a concept of money. You know,
she never has. No.
Well, yeah. And that'll come up in subsequent episodes we'll be talking about. But let me just say, outside of the fact that, you know, she's fun and she's smart and, you know, attractive, whatever, I'd love to be friends with her just because I could probably get a lot of money out of her with no problem. You know, I wouldn't have my current money issues if I was friends with Rebecca Bunch, quite frankly. But the Trent character, and I'll tell you where they hooked me with this character in this episode. I mean, not so much when we first are reintroduced to him, because I remember going, oh, he's back. Okay, this could be interesting. You know, when he's spending like $10,000 on the clothing and all that crap. It's the Trent is getting ready song.
Yeah. a direct callback to the first season where Rebecca sang that song, getting ready for
yeah the
sec- for Greg.
That was the sexy getting ready song, if I recall.
Yeah,
yeah. It's the sexy getting ready song, which I won't torture you with.
Mm-hmm.
But not the fact that this show can be so beautifully self-aware that they can pull off parodying themselves is fantastic. Because, I mean, you'll mention, I'm sure, even more than me probably, that they love doing their callbacks and referencing earlier episodes, just, you know, because it's rewarding, especially if you've watched them more than once, like we have, quite frankly. But when they did that, and I recognized it right off the bat, you know, the opening strains of the music, I'm like, oh, that is so brilliant. Well done, whoever came up with this idea. Probably Rachel Bloom herself, who knows. But anyway, he's great in the episode for any number of reasons. Was there anything specific, you know, right off the top of your head that was like your highlight of this episode before we get into all the other little things about it?
My highlight was him spending all that money just to try to get in with the guy group, and he really didn't need to do all that. Of course, because he's an echo of Rebecca, and it's no surprise that he thinks that he could just buy his way in. I mean, really, guys are not that vain. Like, we don't really need you to buy our friendship. You just do just hang out, you know what you're actually talking about, because you could spot someone doesn't know what to talk about from a mile away.
Oh yeah, I mean his routine at what's the name of the baseball oriented bar that they're always at? Is it Home Base?
Yeah, I think it's Home Base.
Home Base. Him clearly having no clue about anything was some of the funniest stuff I'd seen on the show. I mean, just, you know, repeating everything they said, getting them each their own chicken wing. So much really good stuff there. Well, you know what? Speaking of the guys for a moment here, little observation I noticed, especially because I actually just rewatched all these episodes within the last 2 days, so they're a bit fresher in my mind. Have you noticed that, and maybe it's just me, but I don't think it is, White Josh is being written a lot smarter this season than he was in the first season?
Yes. Yes, he is. He's really become like the voice of the audience in some ways.
Yes, absolutely. He's kind of the he's kind of like the male version of Heather, because Heather is kind of doing it on the women's side, you know, mm-hmm. in that group, so to speak. And White Josh, who in the first season seemed to be his only function was, oh, I'm the white version of Josh, and Josh himself has not been a brain surgeon. Let's face it. And I think, and they've quite frankly, I think they've dumbed him down dumbed him up. Is it? I don't know. They've dumbed him somehow. He's gotten dumber. I call it the Sam. They've done the Sam Malone thing to him, or the Homer Simpson thing to him, where we should make this character just a little bit dumber.
Yeah, and you can really see that throughout these five episodes that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, but White Josh has become a lot smarter, which has made him a much more interesting character. It's made him and as a result, it's also made him a much more interesting partner pairing with Daryl as well. Because then I like that dynamic better when he's smarter, as opposed to being like the eye candy that he essentially was in season one. And I think it's also another thing that necessitated this was they don't have Greg anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have Greg in that group, I mean, Josh ain't no brain surgeon, like I said. Hector ain't too bright himself. So you need someone to be kind of a bit smarter. So I think they kind of decided, I think White Josh needs to step up to the plate here. Maybe we need to make him a little bit smarter. Unfortunately, one can go, oh, why did it have to go along those minority lines? But whatever, the show is so great with diversity, who cares? Okay. What else did I want? Obviously there's a big part about this episode, but I feel we're going to say that, you know, something we're going to build to here. So I'm going to talk about something just silly. Maya again. I kind of, especially in this episode, which kind of was the culmination of how she's been mistreated for all the previous episodes, and she finally kind of blow in her little mousy way, as Daryl would say, blows up at Daryl about it. I kept thinking up until this point, they're kind of treating Maya like she was like the Butters of this show.
Right.
You know, that's for if people who are listening, if you watch South Park, you know what I mean. And if you don't watch South Park, then ignore what I'm about to say. Because, you know, Butters had always, at least for a good chunk of the length of that character, until they changed Butters' character and he started becoming crazy or, you know, psychotic or negative, whatever. But for the most part, Butters was a sweet, innocent kid who, for whatever reason, just kept getting dumped on or being mistreated by whether it be friends or his fellow students or his parents. And he'd be like, oh, it's kind of mean. And bad things keep happening to him, even though he's done nothing to deserve it. And I kept thinking, that's kind of the way they're treating Maya on this show. You could say it about George also, but they only mess up his name. Maya's like, they're cruel to. But Giles had been cruel to, quite frankly.
Yeah, she's been a walking stereotype ever since they introduced her this year. So it was good to see her grow out of that a little bit.
Yeah. And quite frankly, also because she went from being this background character who was just there for a gag to something more fully realized. Mm-hmm. I'd be hesitant to call her a cliche the way there are other cliches on this show. Only because we never got enough about her to I don't know if I knew enough about her to even call her that. You know, she was basically a girl with glasses with a small voice. I don't know, whatever. But I gotta say, among all the other things I really love about this episode, that routine that she does with Daryl, the Maya. And I was really tempted to have that music on this podcast at some point, but that will be one of the few clips I won't be using, but I would love to. I just don't think it works as well without the visual. It's so delightful in its innocent insipidness. Oh, boy.
I feel like they've really gone out of their way to beef up the background characters of The Office.
Oh, absolutely.
And grown out from Paula and Mrs. Hernandez.
Yeah, and you definitely are going to see that in both this episode and a couple subsequent ones later that we'll be talking about. And I'm very happy that they've done that for any number of reasons.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one way that a positive of Greg leaving has been a positive for the show, is that they can focus on other people.
That would be a positive. There will be some negatives that I'll mention in other episodes, not this one, unfortunately. But I do understand what you're saying. About the overall episode, and then we're going to get to what was really the thing to talk about here. I really enjoy the fact that there was this nice melding of storylines, that all the storylines kind of came together in this one, and that there were very clear parallels. I love writing like that, where it's done in a way where it's not as heavy-handed as it sounds when I say it right now. because you've got this parallel of Rebecca trying to force Paula into her group of friends, while Trent is trying to force his way into a different group of friends. So you've got that kind of two different similar things happening at the same time in this episode. But I don't think I really got hit over the head with that parallel happening.
And you could also even say that there's a third group with Daryl and Maya trying to force their way into a group as well.
Yes, that is thematically one of the things about this episode. It's the fact that it's something I want to say more about Rebecca in general, but you could say it about just people in general in this episode, you know, because Rebecca's denial from like season one and even going into this season about stuff with her relationships with men or Josh, whatever, now has kind of shifted to her perception of friend dynamics and specifically her relationship with Paula. But then you realize it's interesting is that Rebecca, obviously she's the title character who's got her issues, but this is a show about a lot of people with issues. And in this episode alone, you realize, then we get Trent, the sociopath, showing up. He's got issues. Guess what? Daryl's got some serious issues too, which get explored in a later episode as well. Even Maya's got her issues. A lot of people got issues. Mm-hmm. Some worse than others, but definitely. So let's get to the focus of this episode, which was Rebecca trying to get Paula, trying to reestablish her friendship with Paula by indoctrinating her into this girl group. And how horribly, horribly wrong it goes. What was your take on it before I say anything else?
It's one of those cringeworthy things where you feel bad just watching it because it's making you uncomfortable because of something that may have happened in your life and you can relate to this. As you can see, it's a train wreck, and Rebecca's in denial that it's just not working. You know, Paula doesn't want to be there. You know, Valencia and Heather, they don't really want her there either. And Rebecca's just trying to force it. And everything that can go wrong does go wrong.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily describe it as Valencia and Heather don't want her there. That's not – I wouldn't say that's accurate. I don't really think we get a – I'll be honest. I don't really think we get a very strong sense of Valencia's opinions in this episode. Heather is just, you know, again, like we said earlier, speaking for the audience – Heather's just clearly aware of what's happening and is telling it like it is. So, you know, she doesn't really want to be here because you just coordinated this whole thing, which is all you've done is really make everyone feel awkward, which is exactly what she did. Mm-hmm. You know, because Rebecca ends up choosing the worst possible way to kind of reconnect with her friend possible. So the fault lies with Rebecca, you know, and whatever. What else did happen here? Oh, just because we love the little jokes here. I love the running gag during this episode of all these different people recognizing that Rebecca and Heather's new place was a place where people were or were kicked. I think we put together at a certain point that there were drug dealers here that were killed or executed or something. I found that that made me laugh every time they kind of hit that nail on the head. I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that the place is falling apart as well, which is a big reason, which is a big plot point.
Yeah. I mean, cause then you end up with Paula being stuck in the bathroom, which then gives us the great song parody of Stuck in a Closet, which is the R. Kelly song, Stuck in the Bathroom by Heather. I love
that. No kidding. If there's ever a chance for, like, this is a parody of a song in big neon letters, this is it.
It's interesting because most of the songs on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend are not so much parodies as they are
homages
to different genres.
Or pastiches, yeah.
Not a pastiche. Shut up.
Big words.
Yeah, it's not a pastiche. Anyway, well, everyone's gonna be googling that. Let me see. Did he mean that? But this one, yeah, is one of those. Oh yeah, that's like right on the money there. And I think someone else said it online, and I initially go, no, it's actually. And they're like, no, they're right. I even watched the video for the R. Kelly thing. Like, yeah, it's a direct parody on it. Absolutely. Also, like earlier in the episode, they had the Friendtopia number, which I don't think was really a direct parody of any specific song. It was just kind of in the style of any number of songs. I mean, that was more, one of those more girl group kind of things, if I recall. Yeah,
I was thinking Spice Girls.
Yeah, I thought Spice Girls, especially since she was doing the British accent. Rebecca was, actually.
Exactly.
So I had a little bit of that. And even though...
And they even go through the, like the sexy one and the brainy one or whatever.
Yes. Oh, and even though it's not... wasn't technically a song exactly... But I want to mention it because of the phrase that gets reused a few times in later episodes. When Rebecca tries to make up a song on the spot called This Song Goes in a Loop-de-Loop. Do you remember
that part? Yes.
Also because she says something which made me smile because it reminded me of when I was a kid. Because she said, wow, my lisp. She said she thought it could be the next John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. I freaking loved that song when I was a kid. The two songs I loved the most when I was like a little kid, and you know, in like in music class, and you're like in first grade, was Bingo and John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. I was like, oh, we're gonna sing John Jacob Jingleheimer. Tra la 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 la. Anyway,
yeah, it's a real earworm.
But here's the thing: there's a lot of humor in this episode. Obviously, everything from the stuff we've mentioned already to even I love lines like Heather noting that, do like firemen never come to this house? They called 911 and they just never show up. But I think what makes the episode stand out for me more than anything else, and maybe other people as well, was the dramatic stuff that happens towards the end. The real argument between Paula and Rebecca, which was pretty strong. And both acting wise and dramatically, forget the humor, it was really effective, I thought.
Mm-hmm. And all that nonsense and craziness and wackiness led up to that point just to pay it off, and they did it really well. It's well done.
Yeah, and it was like this elephant in the room that we've been waiting for at this point for several episodes, I don't remember how many episodes it was exactly, but at least a few. Where wow, Rebecca still doesn't know what Paula went through yet.
And no. Mm-hmm.
The fact it finally came out here and in the way that, just kind of knocked Rebecca off her moorings a little bit because she thought she was, totally in the right about Paula not even giving this night a chance. Even though, once again, it's like, yeah, maybe you could have just spent time with her alone since you hadn't done all this time instead of automatically trying to force her into your girl group, which is really the thing you did wrong to begin with. But anyway, I thought this was definitely one of the best episodes of the series, quite frankly. I think it worked on so many different levels and utilized so many characters well and in a very strong way. I don't think I could find any fault in this episode.
I can't either. It was really good.
Okay. I think maybe now we can then move on to the next episode. Does that sound good to you?
That sounds great to me.
Yeah. This is what happens when we don't practice things ahead of time.
I'm trying to stifle a cough there.
Okay. Thank you for not being like certain other people. All right. So our next episode is Who's the Cool Girl Josh Is Dating?
Period sex. Excuse me, what happened? It's not slut shame, lady. Just because her libido doesn't go away during menstruation. Mm-hmm. That girl, whoever she is, should be commended. Okay, stop.
Now, in this episode, we have Rebecca and Valencia. Well, they find out that Josh has been dating someone, and they want to find out all about her. And meanwhile, Paula is having issues with her relationship with her own husband, Scott. That's a pretty quick, brief synopsis, right? Yeah, okay. I'll say this right off the bat. What I really liked about this episode specifically was, because I have things I didn't like about it, just forewarning you right now. Okay. I really like the teaming up of Rebecca and Valencia. It's because I love that two characters that are very different, and but they share that weird commonality of the Josh factor or whatever you want to call it. But I love the idea what they pulled off on this show, at least in this episode, to have those two, and then again having like Heather's commentary there, because her commentary is always like so right on point. You know, even if it's something as silly as "I know you guys couldn't like Coolio that much" or something, whatever it is she says.
You're right.
But that definitely one of my favorite things about the episode overall, from top to bottom, was all the Rebecca/Valencia stuff. Those two specifically working in tandem with each other.
Yeah, it's all, once they're enemies, now they're friends because they have one common thing. And that's Josh.
Yes. Which then kind of takes me to some, I'll say right now, what I don't like so much about this episode. And it's echoes in future episodes. I gotta be honest, I don't love scenes that are just focusing on Josh and Anna, the new girl in his life. They just don't do that much for me. I'm not saying they're horrible. I'm just saying whenever those scenes were on in this episode and later episodes, I'm just wanting them to be over. I just want to get to all the other characters I simply find more interesting or care about more. So again, it's not like some, when you talk about some shows where I hate the scenes. I don't hate the scenes. I'm just not as into them as I am any other scenes on the show, if that makes any sense.
It makes sense, because you know she's only going to be on there for a limited period of time. You just don't know how long it is.
That's not even about that. It's just, I just don't find her interesting.
For me, it is.
And I'll be honest, when she's not around, I find Josh to be the least interesting character on the show to begin with. So combining him with this other girl, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever, let's move on, please. You know? And quite frankly, I am so not clear throughout this episode why Valencia and Rebecca think that Anna, at least for the first half of it, are treating her or thinking of her like she's some sort of goddess compared to them. It's like, really? Are you kidding? I wasn't getting that at all. I didn't see why they would see it that way. I almost didn't really believe it to a certain extent. I went along with it for the show, for the episode, but it's one of those plot points I really didn't buy as much as I do others on this show, quite frankly.
I can see that. I don't know how it affects Valencia, but you know Rebecca has self-esteem issues, so maybe it's the fact that she's blonde and pretty and you know she's got a nice figure that could feed into her paranoia.
Yeah. Yeah, but the problem I have with that is, quite frankly, by most male standards, Rebecca has nothing to worry about, you know, lined up next to this one, please. I personally don't buy it. That's all. Remember previous episode we were talking about? I mentioned the loop-de-loop song. They use the phrase loop-de-loop twice in this episode. They keep talking about Josh. They keep saying, well, now we're back in a loop-de-loop. So that seems to be a running thing from this episode.
It's the next running gag.
Oh, speaking of running gags, there's one thing I loved about this episode. And again, I don't know if I love the episode overall, but one thing I did love was various minor running gags they had throughout it. I'm sure you have one or two in mind. I'll let you go first on this one before I say anything. Was there a specific running gag that you enjoyed specifically on this one?
I think it's going to be the same one that you have, and that's the reoccurrence of the period sex song.
I wasn't even thinking of that. Okay, perfect. Yes, they do the reprise, albeit briefly, of the period sex song, which is amazing. And again, Matt Treist, a fellow who probably will never listen to this podcast, so why am I even saying his name, mentioned on a Facebook page recently that they had said that there will be a full version of the period sex song. But supposedly, it will be online, not in an actual program, because of how dirty it is or something. Okay, I just want to be clear. I did not read or hear this myself. I'm not saying it's not true. I just haven't vetted the veracity of that statement. I do find it a little hard to believe in a show that's had songs about things like, I don't know, threesomes and heavy boobs and And also, whether someone might be mistaken for an incestuous pedophile.
Yeah, and they said they're going to finish on the chest.
Yes. I find it hard to believe they couldn't do anything more with the period sex song that's worse than the lyrics they've already mentioned every time it's come up on the show. But mm-hmm.
Here's a fun fact, though. If you go on there, they do have more explicit versions of the songs on YouTube than they do on the show.
Nice.
Like Jap Battle is much more explicit about what they say. The I'm a good person song from the first season mm-hmm. ends with F you.
Nice.
But they actually say the word fuck.
Okay. Like you just did.
Yeah.
Which is okay. I don't mind saying the occasional fuck if it actually, you know, makes sense to say it. Or unless you're doing like a really angry rant, then I fully approve, you know, using fuck all the live long day. I just don't like the needless use of it because it cheapens things, in my opinion. And again, we're never gonna attract an interesting guest if we, you know, 2 minutes into the podcast we're needlessly cursing and it's not even all that funny. He'll never listen to this. I don't care. So anyway, back to running gags. I'll tell you one or two of mine right now. Then I like in this episode, we get Rebecca keeps saying to Valencia, we need to have a serious talk. Because one of the things I really loved about this episode is the realization that Valencia has some really serious criminal tendencies. she's swiping keys and totally rationalizing it. She's stealing stuff at the salon. Gotcha. Yet, you know, her body dysmorphia is not a crime, other than the fact that someone who looks like that, you're the last person who should have that issue. I mean, people tell me I have that issue, and I'm like, dude, I'm pushing over 200 pounds. Shut the fuck up. But Valencia having that issue is ridiculous.
Yeah, remember the first time we heard that was when Rebecca tried to infiltrate her life at the yoga studio when she went on about how she had sex with a teacher.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. The first time she said, we need to have a serious talk about that.
I'm so happy you brought that up because I totally forgot that. So look at that. It's not just a running gag within the episode. It's a callback. Oh, look at that.
It's a callback too.
And it would be sacrilegious of me not to mention one of my favorite things about this episode and a running gag throughout this episode, which I have in my limited notes I have in front of me. I wrote in big black letters, Rebecca has the best TV tastes. Because during the course of this episode, number one, on separate occasions, Rebecca and Paula separately say to the person they're with, that you don't watch The Wire or you haven't seen The Wire? Paula saying a phrase that me and other people have used, that they're jealous of the other person because you get to watch it for the first time.
Yep.
And what Paula then says to her, what I call her bracelet buddy from school, she says that she's referring to herself and Rebecca. She refers to Rebecca being so Avon and I am so Stringer Bell, which is mm-hmm. what I used in our intro earlier. And that's why I took it from, just in case anyone was wondering why I mentioned The Wire in our opening.
Here's a fun fact. David Simon is a big fan of the show.
I would never, ever, 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 ever. You know what I just did without even realizing it? I just did a riff on Josh Chan, which because when she's lip reading him, he's saying ever, ever over and over in that little video clip. I never would have guessed that.
Yep, it's true.
And just to quickly finish up the TV tasting, so you got The Wire, then Rebecca also says to someone else, to Valencia actually, have you not seen Breaking Bad? How do you live your life? So you got Breaking Bad reference. Of course, Valencia's response is something like, I go outside. And then later on, we get the trifecta, and also, word for people who haven't seen the show, they should include this because it's in the same league as The Wire and Breaking Bad. Maybe not quite that good, but still belongs in the same hallowed breath, I suppose. When Rebecca says to Valencia later on, I've been saving Friday Night Lights for someone special. I think she said it to Rebecca. I think she said it to Valencia. Is that who she says it to?
I don't remember. I have to look that up.
Doesn't matter. Who cares?
Yeah.
Anyway, you get I just love the fact that we got a running gag of mentioning these incredibly high quality TV shows throughout the episode.
At least two of the best TV shows ever to have been on TV.
Yeah.
We'll let you decide which two we're talking about.
Yeah.
Hint, it's not Friday Night Lights.
But Friday
Night Lights. It was good.
Friday Night Lights is really good, though. The first season of Friday Night Lights especially is really, really good. But yeah, The Wire and Breaking Bad, you talk about, in my opinion, two of the best shows of all time, hands down. So, again, don't want to get, we're going down that rabbit hole. Let's quickly find our way out of it.
Yeah, there's rabbit poop down there.
Yes, look at you referencing the episode. Oh, it's so cool. So what else do we have going on in this episode that you might want to point out, other than the different song numbers, perhaps, because we haven't gotten to that yet?
Other than Paula's husband, that coming out of nowhere. But that's more serious than anything, but nah, I can't think of anything else.
But I like the stuff with her husband because... See, I don't know if I'd necessarily say it came out of nowhere, because they established his barbershop quartet thing a while ago. That's been a big... That's one of the only things I've ever even known about the guy up until recently. I didn't... I couldn't have... If you told me before this episode, I think, what does Paula's husband Scott do for a living, I'd be like, truck driver, maybe? No. I don't know. Factory guy? I don't know. But... It was established as like the one thing he seems to care about. So her not showing up for it, and you know, because of law school, whatever, blah blah blah. That I felt that worked because okay, that's the one thing we know about him. What happens in a subsequent episode, you could say maybe comes a little bit out of nowhere, but they laid the foundation for it here. So
yeah.
And that's going to be part of that could be seen as part of an issue I'm going to bring up later in the podcast. I don't know. I don't know if I view it that way as much as other storyline issues on the show. But we'll see. Was there anything else worthy? Well, the song stuff, because I think before we could move on to any other episode, we should just mention whatever the songs were. This is the one that had the Anna singing the Research Me Obsessively song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like her character very much. It was cute, just detailing all the different ways you can cyberstalk someone legitimately. And I'm sure many people watching have had moments like that. Or maybe I will spend the $9.99 in this background check thing to find out that address on a girl that I remember from high school or some weird shit like that. Not that I've ever done that, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, Spokio's sure. A thing.
Yeah. But I will say, they did have one other than the 5 second reprise of period sex. I really like the "You Go First" number that they do at the end of the episode because it's a total takeoff on like an '80s heart ballad. This I would also view as more a parody or almost parody, quite frankly. Maybe not a specific heart song, but they're doing heart. I mean, everything they even end up in the big crazy wigs. And it's shot in a certain way, like old, like Heart videos from the 80s. So it's the way they're belting it out to each other. They're doing Heart.
Super obvious.
Yeah. And very enjoyable as well. I also love that we get a song that's got both Rebecca and Paula singing, not inhabiting the same space, but singing to each other. So I enjoy that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think the only other thing is I also like the fact that Rebecca mentioned courtroom farts in this episode. So that's always a fun thing to hear. And with that, in the interest of time, let us move on to the next episode, which was titled "Who is Josh's Soup Fairy?" Now, with this episode, this was the one where Rebecca decides to, in a way to make up with Paula, that she's going to basically babysit for her son so Paula can go on this weekend field trip with her from law school, I guess, to visit like the Supreme Court in Sacramento or something like that. And also in this episode, this is where Josh thinks he might have found a new career path, which basically leads to Anna breaking up with him. Oh, boy. Now, we got all that happening in this episode. And I'll tell, by the way, another episode I'm like half and half on. But let's get right to the big thing. And I'm saying this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, is that this is the episode where Miss Hernandez talks.
Finally. She breaks her silence.
Now, did you think we would ever hear her speak? Or did we think, or did you think it might be something where we would hear her speak, but if they would wait for like the finale of the show or something like that? Or
Right. Because the irony of the joke is so great that she's the communications director, but yet she doesn't talk.
Right.
That's something that you could just drag on forever.
And also the fact of what she basically says, where, you know, well, her first words are, "Would you just shut up?" And then she basically reads Rebecca the Riot Act and, you know, just calls her every name in the book. And she comes up with even this really nice phrase of how she's busy staring in a narcissus pond of her bewitching self, which leads to Rebecca having that great, "Wow, you're mean and poetic." But what I, the first thing I thought when I saw it, you know, the very first time, you know, back in December, was a character who never speaks, and the first thing she says is, "Would you just shut up?" My first thought was, oh, it takes me right back to Newhart, in the final episode of Newhart, when you had Larry, Daryl, and Daryl, and those who remember that show should remember that Daryl never spoke throughout the several years that show was on, until the finale, where they both turned to their respective wives, who were chatterboxes, and yelled, "Shut up!" So that was the first thing that I thought of.
I had a different reference come to mind, and that's Silent Bob from Jay and Silent Bob in the Chase and Amy movie, when he gives his Chase and Amy speech.
And the first thing he ever says is "Shut up." Is that basically what happens? Because I don't remember.
Well, he pretty much starts out by saying he's Holden is chasing Amy. That's what he says, and Jay's like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Will you just shut up?"
Oh, okay. And I'll go really obscure on you. I'll go back to a movie from the 70s. Mel Brooks, as we remember, you know, Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, High Anxiety even. But he had this other movie in the 70s called Silent Movie, which I haven't seen it in a long time. I've seen, but it's not a Mel Brooks movie that holds up quite as well as others, you know, because basically the conceit is it's a silent movie. And he's got all his usual people in it. Plus, you know, Paul Newman even shows up in that movie. So that's a great little 6 degrees of separation. You know, Paul Newman actually showed up in a Mel Brooks movie once. However, there is one person in the entire movie who does make a sound. And it's the famous mime, Marcel Marceau. He's the only character who speaks in the movie. And I believe, I might be misremembering this. He either says, "Shh," or he says, "Shut up." I think he just says, "Shh," which still, if you're a mime, you've still broken the rule because you've made a sound. But that's as close as you got. So I like to think that's kind of also in the tradition of someone who's always silent actually making a sound. So, wow, how'd I go from talking about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend to Marcel Marceau? Wow.
Quite a line there. A string.
So let me wrap that string around my finger and get back to this episode. Okay, I got to tell you right now that I think there maybe were a few great moments in this episode, or at least really funny moments, mostly lines that were said at that club, like when Rebecca thinks that the waitress is saying, she's saying soju, which is a drink, but she thinks she's like some sort of Nazi, which is pretty funny.
Yes.
Or even her doing a little "Tommy, can you hear me? Tommy, can you see me?" thing, which was, you know, any Who fan loved that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Mine was when she's stuck in the bathroom with Heather and she says, "How many times do I have to listen to Josh have sex in the bathroom?"
Yeah, it's funny and sad at the same time. But I got to tell you, before we talk about any more of the episode right now, this was probably one of my least favorite episodes of the entire series. And I'll tell you why. This show, I think it's always done a really great job at, you know, poking fun at so many cliches and cliché tropes. I mean, Rachel Bloom herself has talked about it on interviews. I mean, the very idea of the show, the very premise of the series, is based on that. It's poking fun at different, you know, major elements of romantic comedies and so on and so forth. But this episode, well, first of all, for me, like the whole, I don't know what else to call it. Let's call it the adventures in babysitting, you know, concept. I just feel, okay, this has been there, done that too many times for me. And I just was like, really? That's what this episode is going to be focused on? And going along with that, I found that Rebecca and her near constant irresponsibility, really, for me, by the end of the episode, it gets waved off way too easily. You know, I get that the kid, Tommy, I get that Tommy is supposed to be more than a handful here, because all you've been hearing about is how bad these kids are. We've seen them in moments here or there, although his brother seems worse. And that's why he's off, you know, riding a bus somewhere or something, I guess. But, you know, and I know that even at the end, Paula talks about her own misadventures. I'll use adventures again with him in the past. But I'm sorry. I don't care. That doesn't change the fact of what Rebecca actually did. That she could not put aside her own obsessions and her self-centeredness aside for one whole weekend and took this kid to a nightclub. I'm sorry. I don't see how that can be so easily excused. And here's where we get to a plot point in the episode. Remember earlier I was talking about, you know, most things I just go along with because it's fun and I don't care. This one I was kind of like, got a problem here. Because what's her reason for going to the club? Her reason is because I think Josh, when he posts a picture of him with the chicken soup, thinks that Anna did it for him. And right. She's going to take credit for the soup. I've got to go down there and tell him otherwise. Beyond the fact that just doesn't make any sense. Because, number one, why on earth would she think Anna would want to take credit for soup that he was given by someone else? It makes way more sense that she would be, at the very least, curious, maybe jealous, maybe annoyed, maybe upset, maybe confused. But there is no indication of any kind that she would that she should think that Anna would just take credit for it. It doesn't make any sense. So I already and we can just chalk it up to Rebecca being, you know, cuckoo. That goes back to her being incredibly irresponsible here, and I think she just gets too much of a pass for it. And so for me, the premise is more flawed than most episodes of the show, and so that kind of really bothered me.
Right. I disagree with you a little bit because I enjoyed it because they played it so broadly in terms of like him getting his ID and the bouncer just waving him in because he's like, I don't care. What did he say? He's getting a stunt job as a stunt person or something like that.
Yeah, he must be a stuntman. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was just one of those things where like this is purely like the joke, you know, is that, yeah, we know he's not supposed to be there. And he does what he does and he disappears and he manages to get himself home. And, you know, as Paula says, she's done with this before. So it's really not that big of a deal to her, just as long as he's home and he's safe. And the fact that he's responsible enough to take an Uber home.
I guess
that's what
it bothers me because I didn't buy the premise. I don't come up. Here's the thing. Dear writers, you do such a great job with this show. Give me a better reason why Rebecca has to go to that club. Not the reason you gave me didn't work for me. I didn't believe it because she wouldn't think that. This girl is already his girlfriend. She wouldn't take credit for something being given to him by us when she doesn't know who did it. There's nothing about that makes sense. And she's encountered this woman. She spent that time with her. There's nothing about her personality-wise that would in any way lead her to think that. That bothered me. You give me a better reason why they're at the club, something, you know, so there's a better reason for that sense of urgency that need to be there, I go along with it. Otherwise, I don't believe it. And then when she gets there and she realizes she's there and oh my god, I gotta avoid her, it's like, why wouldn't you think she'd be there? You have no reason to think she wouldn't be there. So you should have known from the get-go you'd have to worry about running into her. And if there's so many things that just don't make sense about it, and it just bothered me. Doesn't mean I didn't like scenes that happened there. Of course I did. But I got to be able to critique a problem I have with the episode, and that's my problem. So if this was like an episode I was grading, well, that just knocked it down a letter for me because I just didn't buy that part.
That's fair.
You know?
That's fair. And what you're talking about the club, this is going to sound stupid, but this is another callback. It's how Rebecca's obsession with how spiders is spelled.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah. And just to finish up my bashing of the episode just for a moment, also the fact that this episode focused so much on Josh, who, like I said earlier, is clearly getting dumber as the show is going on. And so the fact that a lot of it's about his relationship with who I think is the least interesting female character I've ever seen on this show didn't exactly excite me to watch. I will say I did enjoy watching the bros react when they realized what was unfolding at the club. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Another good white Josh moment in Hector.
Right. It's weird because when you watch them, you know, on one hand you want to say, I feel like they kind of miss Greg, you know, being part of this group. But on the other hand, you watch them, you're like, did Greg really, really fit in with these guys? He never seemed to really quite fit in to me either. So it's kind of one of those half of one, six dozen of the other, I guess.
Right. He was always the sarcastic outsider, it seemed like.
I feel like everything I have to say about this episode is kind of negative, actually. Which is okay because I'm so positive about other episodes. So I like the balance of it. I didn't like the songs very much in this episode either.
The maternal one, that was okay, but that was more along the fact of the visuals more than the actual lyrics itself.
Well, there's nothing interesting about the lyrics. It's just kind of, oh, yeah, about being a mom, and you don't know anything about being a mother, but you think you're an expert. But yeah, the riff one when they're doing, you know, it's a little bit of Cameo's Word Up, it's a little bit of Bill Biv DeVoe's Poison, a little MC Hammer kind of stuff. But it's I thought, more Word Up than anything else, especially the way Rebecca was dressed and the weird hair that she had.
Right.
So it was forgettable. And Josh just does not interest me when he does songs in general. This was a duh, right? Was that the song?
Yeah, duh.
Yeah. It should have been meh, because that was how I felt about the song. I was like, yeah, whatever. Let me put it this way. When Josh is singing alone, I'm glad I'm watching it on the DVR from this point on, unless, you know, whatever, because I'm probably going to fast forward those songs. Because I don't care anymore. I can't. If he's duetting or doing, those are usually fine. We got a great one later in the season, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But the Josh, I mean, I think I gave a pass to Thought Bubbles in our last podcast. I said I thought I kind of liked it. Some of those I've thought about since then, like, not so much.
There's only one Josh song that I've really liked, and that was Ping Pong Girl.
Oh, God, I forgot all about that.
That was his song, and I thought it was good. It was Good Charlotte or one of those type of songs. But, you know, that's the only song I've liked of his.
Well, I feel like I just kind of unloaded on this episode a little bit. So is there anything positive else you'd want, or negative, but positive you want to say about it before we move on to the next one? Dead silence.
Sorry, I did that thing again. other than they had a little podcast thing in there.
Reminds me of how bad our podcast is. Great. Yeah, it's good to point that out.
All I was thinking is like, oh, so that's how it's supposed to be done.
All right, that's enough out of you. We're moving on to the next one because we're taking way too long with these episodes, apparently. And the next episode is, oh boy, the next one is, When Do I Get to Spend Time with Josh?
It's me, it's always me, and no one says a word. But this time I'll stand up for myself and finally be heard. George won't be ignored, George won't be interrupted.
Well, this is the one where basically Daryl sells the law firm, and pretty much puts a bunch of people's jobs at risk. Now, I like the fact that, and I normally wouldn't, but in this one instance, I like the fact that the CW actually aired these last two back-to-back in one night. Because, yeah, normally I hate when networks pull that, especially because my DVR isn't configured to tape both episodes, probably. So I had to, like, wait and track this one down. I'm sorry, I had to track the previous one down on demand before I could watch this one, which I did have in my DVR. But the reason I was happy in this instance is not just because I got a double helping. I really liked this episode much more than the previous one. So that kind of helped clear my palate from the episode I was kind of iffy on. So before we even get into the specifics of this episode, because I feel I need to point out that a lot of stuff happens. In fact, a lot of stuff happened between the very end of the previous episode going into this one, because we didn't really mention the fact that Josh shows up at Paula's house to try to reconcile with Rebecca, and Rebecca finally does something quote-unquote selfless, whatever. But we continue with that in this episode, as well as many other things. But here's something I think I was wondering about. I want to get your take on this. It echoes something that you had said earlier, which I didn't necessarily agree with at that point, but I'm thinking more in terms of what happens in this episode and moving on from here. Do you think they're kind of speeding things up more because it's a shorter season, because we're only doing a 13-episode season, and last season I believe it was 18 episodes?
Yes.
Do you get that sense?
Yes. And this is the end of last episode, and the beginning of this episode is a perfect encapsulation of that, just while all the changes of the relationship dynamics that happen.
Right. So, do you think in a weird... I mean, it's funny, because a lot of times when we talk about different TV shows, just in general, not even on a podcast, just wherever, online, whatever, in person, or on our podcast, more often than not, we seem to be in favor of shorter seasons, because you end up with tighter storytelling, etc. We've talked about certain shows on Netflix that could stand to be even shorter than that, or how certain other shows, or it's just the right length. Or, quite frankly, there's the, I think the golden rule for me is when a season is over, and I believe I've said this recently, whatever, if you're left wanting more, like, oh, I wish there was just a little bit more, hey, you know what? They just did the job. They left you wanting more, but not in a bad way. Like, oh, I wish there had been one more episode. That's fine. My concern here is that there's so much going on with the show, plus the songs and the humor, whatever. This is a show that I think really works with a somewhat longer season, an 18-episode season, because I don't recall there being all that many last year that felt, you know, like filler or unnecessary. I'm sure there were. We've not talked about it because I don't really remember. But I kind of remember enjoying the season for the most part. I don't remember being like, not liking any episodes.
Right. It wasn't a part where you're like, gosh, when is the season going to end?
Right.
If you're checking the Netflix queue, it's like, how many more episodes do I have to go? Like, you never thought that. You were just constantly devouring it. And I know I've come out against binge watching, it seems like, in the past few months. But this was one that I really enjoyed. I just wanted to watch over and over.
I'm sorry. This is a great show to binge. And the fact that it's also a lighter show makes it even work better as a binge. Because you're not watching something for several hours and being depressed by it.
Yeah, it's no the OA.
Right. All right, shut up. Shut up. Anyway, one episode's bad. Okay. However, I'll reverse myself right now, because that's what I'll do. If this had been a longer season, we might have ended up with two or three more Josh and Anna relationship episodes. So there's that. So I got to weigh the good with the bad on that one.
Yeah, but there's something that happens off screen. This kind of takes you by surprise, which could have used like an episode of lead up or something. And that's when Daryl sells the firm.
Right. Well, you kind of beat me to it. But all right. So in this episode, we do get those two big developments, and that's certainly one of them. And the other one being that, well, Rebecca and Josh become a couple again. And Josh actually says, I love you to her. And we were talking about callbacks earlier. I think we get some really nice callbacks upon that profession of love, or professing of love, not profession, that go all the way back to our first intro to Wes Covina in the pilot.
Yes.
I mean, I think
she actually steps out of the cab. She's wearing the same dress.
It's the same dress. She does. They're holding pretzels, like the big pretzel she was riding back in the first episode. I loved all that stuff.
I actually thought we were going to get a reprise of the song, and I was happy for it. Yes, I love that song.
I think we got little strains of it melodically in the background, but we never actually get the song, which the only reason I don't mind that is because that song, that for me, the Wes Covina song, I do like it. I think it's one of the longer songs, or at least my memory makes it seem like it, because it seemed like it went on forever. So that's why I don't mind it.
Yeah.
But you know, looping back to what you just mentioned before, you know, because more importantly to me personally, the huge change in the entire work dynamic with what Daryl did, you know, essentially him goofing up and selling controlling interests of the law firm to Plimpton, Plimpton, Plimpton. I don't think it's Plimpton, Plimpton and Plimpton. I think it's just Plimpton, 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 but I'm not sure. I don't know, but I think it was Plimpton, Plimpton, Plimpton. And then we meet a new character who's interesting because he's both the antagonist now, but he's also clearly going to be an obstacle in Rebecca's love life at this point, or possibly her next relationship. But since we are about to talk about this new guy, I thought it might be a good time for us to pause and hopefully someone who's not here was able to make an MP3 of a certain song I tracked down for it, which we would like to now play for you here.
I don't like new things. I don't like it when new people come in. It is never a good thing.
Who's the new guy? I don't trust him. What's his purpose going to be?
Who's this new character? I mean, he's such a character. Such a big persona that's not relatable at all.
Do we really need a new guy this far into the season? And by far into the season, I mean it's almost fall.
Who's the new guy? I don't trust him.
He's suspiciously good-looking in ways that normal people are not.
Is this some sort of desperate move to help our ratings?
You mean our terrible ratings on LegalScores.com?
Yeah.
Will he be here forever?
Or just for two or three episodes? I need Karen's manic episodes.
I'm a ticking time bomb.
Who's the new guy? I don't trust him. Is he going to be a mainstay of our lives? Is this someone new we're gonna have to grow to care about? Why should we root for someone male, straight and white? And why is Karen finger painting?
I'm having a manic episode.
Who's the new guy? What's his deal? What's his deal? What's his deal? What's his deal?
Who wants to buy my painting?
Karen, shut up!
Now, if we didn't manage to convert that file to an MP3, you all just got several seconds of nothingness. So you can just pretend it's our commentary on the meaning of life or the universe or something, or I don't know. So I don't mind something being formulaic if it gives us a really powerful engine for the plot of an episode. And while Rebecca, like, needing to save the day, you know, to save the jobs of the people at the law firm could be seen as a bit formula, I thought it worked really well. I thought it gave a really nice sense of urgency to the episode. You know what? Also, I like seeing Rebecca being focused on something other than her quote-unquote love life. I mean, yeah, because even when she was helping Paula out, how much she cared about the Paula situation only seemed to last for about 5 minutes in that entire episode. So I like that a lot of this episode was about her trying to save the day and save these people's jobs for a change.
And it's great to see that she's actually good at her job every once in a while, because otherwise we just think that she's some nutball that's running around West Covina. And I like that aspect of it, that she's really a good lawyer.
I will go even further. I absolutely agree with you. I will go further. It's not that I necessarily want, you know, law case of the week kind of stuff with this show or multiple courtroom scenes. But I would like to see her in court occasionally, or at least in a situation where she is a lawyer, because we are told any number of times that she's a really good lawyer. We've seen her in a couple conference room settings where she's done some persuasive arguments, but we haven't seen her really in action all that much on the show, and it would be nice to have that from time to time. Again, this isn't Law and Order. It's not even The Good Wife, but she is supposed to be not just a lawyer. She's supposed to be like the best lawyer there, at least in that little firm until these guys took over. It's nice to see her. I mean, at least she does a presentation. It's just funny. It's almost like it's less law and more like you're doing a pitch. You know, it's more like Rebecca should be on Mad Men than Law and Order or something, because she's pitching to a client. That's what she's doing. I mean, that is actually what she's doing in this episode. She's making a pitch of how she can win the land deal that they're trying to make or whatever. In any case, I agree. I really like seeing her focused and being the professional, because how else does she have all this money she keeps throwing around? Did we mention that she gives the kid a couple hundred dollars in the other episode to buy candy?
That's right. She did. She did.
But I really enjoyed that part of it. But circling back to the song that you guys were able to hear once again, I think we need to talk about the new character, because that's kind of a significant thing they did in this episode, because they introduced an entirely new character, you know, pretty late in the season, because this is episode number 9 of a 13 episode season, so we're well past the midway point. So I guess his name is Nathaniel. So it's Nathaniel Plimpton.
Plimpton, yeah.
What?
Nathaniel Plimpton.
What did you think? Let's do it this way. What did you think of him/ what did you think of that song?
I love the song because it's so meta. There's just so many things in there that it talks about the ratings, and gosh, there's a couple other things
there's a reason I decided we needed to put the song on the podcast. I'm really hoping we were able to do that for you guys just so you could hear it one more time. But yeah, that's the most self-aware thing I've seen TV-wise since Arrested Development, where they were doing the whole Save the Bluth campaign in their final season, which was all about making fun of the network and their ratings and their situation. But this was using that as a way to introduce a new character was so self-aware, but so smart, because any criticism one could have of it, they are clearly aware of and they're making fun of. And it was really awesome.
It's another one of those, they're speaking for the audience type moments. It's like, how long is he going to be here? Is he going to be around forever? I mean,
it's so smart. It's so damn smart. And I love clever. I love smart on this show. I mean, whether it's obscure, quote unquote, obscure references or knowing nods or winks or something like this song. This for me was one of my favorite song numbers of the season easily. And a rarity to have one like that, that Rebecca herself is not involved in. So that's kind of nice. It was, in fact, it wasn't just Paula either. It was like, I think 5 of them were singing this song. I think all 5 of them at the office were singing
it. It was Paula, Tim, George, Maya, and Karen.
Oh, look at you remembering all the character names. You big old show off.
Yeah, I wanted to say George's name wrong, but I felt like that's just piling on the show's joke.
Well, yeah, another delightful running gag, which I know you've appreciated, is the whole no one getting George's name right on the show. It wasn't until very recently where I think it was a Instagram or tweeted image, and I found out that the actor who plays George, who I did not look up the actor's name, my apologies to him, apparently he's been friends with and colleagues of Rachel Bloom for at least the past 10 years plus. You know, they've been friends. So I just love that she basically, you know, got her friend this gig. I mean, I'm sure he's very talented and he gets, you know, but that's the connection there.
And yeah, he can sing.
And he gets to play this thankless part. So he's got that great little song number, you know, George's Term, which hopefully if you guys were listening, you probably just heard, you know, knock on wood, you know, about 5-10 minutes ago. I don't remember how long ago we started talking about this episode. But so 2 really good solid songs here. But yeah, just a lot of enjoyable stuff here. But Nathaniel's character is interesting because in this episode and what we've seen so far in the next one as well, you know, not the most different character as far as just in general, as far as television is concerned, but different for this show, if that makes any sense.
No, yeah. The law firm needed somebody like that.
Right. We haven't seen someone like that on the show. We've seen characters like that, and maybe not quite as amusing, on other shows a million times over, but we haven't seen him on this show. So that's an interesting element for Rebecca, because outside of maybe Paula going to law school, you rarely ever get the impression anyone really knows much about the law or takes things very seriously at that firm. So now you got someone who's like super professional and is the opposite of pretty much everyone else there. So you're able to put aside whatever cliches that go along with that, because it automatically creates a sense of conflict in the office. So that's the workplace becomes more of a setting for real storylines as opposed to just a backdrop for Rebecca talking about what's going on in her love life, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes complete sense.
What else did you enjoy before I get to anything else myself?
Nice cameo of Patton Oswalt at the end.
Oh my gosh. I hooted and hollered when I saw that. I was like, Patton Oswalt, love Patton Oswalt. Did not see it coming. I said it online, and then a close friend of mine who I know is listening to this podcast pointed out, his name is in the opening credits. Like, well, I wasn't paying attention to the opening credits.
It was in the opening credits. It took forever to get there.
But you know, what's funny is, like, that used to be a thing, like, back in the day when you'd watch a show like Lost, and you'd get annoyed because they might mention someone in the opening credits, and it would have been a surprise if you hadn't known about it already. It's like, oh no, that means Jack's father is going to show up in this episode. That could have been a cool surprise. You assholes. Why is it in there? But I just wasn't paying attention to the credits for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend because, honestly, I'm not expecting there to be a surprise guest star. Or not surprise, I guess, because he's there. I'm not expecting there to be a guest star unless it's already been promoted that way. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, for me, it was a surprise. And I'm still not going to be watching the opening credits that closely because, you know, I'm paying attention to things like, you know, plot and character. But, but yes, I love that Patton Oswalt showed up at the end of this episode.
He's another super fan, by the way.
As well he should be. As well as everyone should be. What else did I... I love when they can kind of get away with a joke, which if told a certain way might make you cringe or certain people cringe. There's a moment when she's at the restaurant when she says, "I gotta go hit the ladies' room. I'm not a football player." And I went, "Oh my god, I can't believe they got away with that." But it was perfect because, you know. And I also like the fact she calls Nathaniel an inglorious bastard. Now, here's the question. Is she saying that because of the Nazi Aryan-like thing or because of a Brad Pitt-like thing? I wasn't clear on that one. I'm going with the Nazi thing.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that was one of the weird things about the episode because they kept going on about how handsome he was. He's not a bad-looking guy, but not to the extent where they were going on about him. I was like, really? I mean, he's good-looking, but, I mean, geez, then you guys should be, like, on the floor panting whenever White Josh walks into the room or something. Seemed a little bit much, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. This guy, he's been on a lot of shows, too, that you don't realize that he's been on. Like, he's been on Halt and Catch Fire and Once Upon a Time.
He was on Halt California. And Catch Fire?
Yeah. He's on Halt and Catch Fire for 7 episodes.
Ooh. Okay, I'm going to have to go look up what he was on that one. Okay. Not now. I'll look it up on my own. Now I'm curious. Now I'm really curious. But, the stuff at the law firm was really good and fun and cool and nice to see the dynamics of Rebecca having, because we don't often see Rebecca with, you know, someone she's facing off against outside of like the Valencia stuff. And even then, she was always trying to get on her good side, so it wasn't really that she was opposed to her. It was more the other way around. But this, I can't think of that many instances of there being someone that she'd be at loggerheads with, where she'd be, you know, have that situation with. So I kind of enjoy that here, if that makes any sense.
It makes sense. It makes sense. And it's nice to know that, how she solves conflict by trying to stab him.
Yes. Yeah. Well, she's got, it's not like she has any issues, you know. But overall, especially compared to the previous episode, it was just very enjoyable. I really enjoyed it a lot. And the Josh and Rebecca stuff is okay in the episode. I liked it. Again, I have to defer to Heather as being kind of the voice of reason or commenting on them once again. I love that Heather is doing that this season. Like I said, we were telling you earlier, I think Heather and White Josh are like the male and female, what's that thing in Shakespeare with the characters who comment on the action that way? I forget the phrases. And I know a certain one listener is going to point out what it is when I say, after they hear this, I can't think what the phrase is.
They speak off stage towards the audience?
Yeah, something like that.
Sotto voce?
Oh, that's not what I'm talking about. Okay. I don't know. Maybe it's Guildenstern or something. I don't fucking know. Anyway, really great episode. We're taking a long time on this podcast, so let's get to the next and last episode of those that we're talking about here, which was Will Scarsdale like Josh's Shaina Poonam.
I've seen worse from this one. I will never forget that crime scene I walked in on between you and Isaac Berger of the Model UN. They were having period sex, put down the towel.
Mom! By the way, if I mispronounced that just now, chalk it up to how late it is and I'm a little tired, because based on my own quote-unquote background, I'm the last person on the podcast who should be mispronouncing phrases like that, but you know, I'm tired. So, this is the episode where Rebecca takes Josh to a bar mitzvah in Scarsdale, hoping that, you know, she can enjoy having a horrible time with him, where I guess the opposite happens. And back at the law firm, you got all this crap going on with Nathaniel and Daryl going on, whatever. That's a really great synopsis, ain't it?
Especially of the weakest part of the story of the episode.
Yeah. You might have something there. We can, if you want to tackle that right now, we can. I'll tell you what I liked or didn't like. I'll tell you something I didn't remember until I watched it again tonight. That was really funny. Daryl's riff that totally sounds like he's comparing himself to literally a piece of shit is both amazing and awful all at once. The fact that he's so blissfully unaware of everything he's saying is like, it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. It's like, oh my God, dude, you should record yourself and then play it back, which I'm referencing Arrested Development by accident just now. But I guess the whole aspect of the episode was Daryl and Nathaniel both have daddy issues. And
yes,
that's what we learned there, which is something. It kind of veers back and forth. It's creepy at times. It's a little bit heartwarming, but not really quite. I don't know. You were kind of iffy on it yourself?
I was kind of iffy on it because I think it's something we've seen before in right. terms of new guy moves in, old boss unsure of what to do, doesn't know where his role is, and the new guy just constantly passes him over for giving him work, just making him feel useless. I feel like it's been done before, and the show, it really didn't put a new spin on it, though, at least in my opinion.
All right, I'd say that's reasonably fair. You know, I wouldn't disagree with you too much on it. I'll say what I liked about it was, I just like giving Daryl something to do that's interesting, that just gives him something more than just trying to be chummy or friends with Paula and or Rebecca at times. So whenever we get the chance for him to do something different, I kind of like that. Especially because he's so consumed with the guilt of what he did, which was, you know, obviously stupid of him.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, question about Daryl before we move on. Is his knocking over the pens at the front desk, has that been like a running gag? Because I noticed it happened 2 times in these 5 episodes. And I got this strange feeling if I were to go back, he's done it other times as well. Is that Do you recall that? Or is it just a weird coincidence that happened twice in these 5 episodes?
No, I think you're right. I think it may have happened before, but I can't exactly put my finger on it, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of joke that would really stand out in the previous, you know, 20-something episodes. But I got the feeling, like, I bet this has happened a few other times. Maybe it even happens in the pilot when he's with meets Rebecca. I don't know. But I noticed it happened a couple times. I'm like, oh, maybe that's a running thing I just wasn't aware of. Okay. Let's switch over to the stuff with Josh and Rebecca this time around. Oh, well, and let me make fun of you for a minute.
Oh, please do.
So, I believe before they arrive in Scarsdale, or whatever, one of the things Rebecca warns Josh about is that it's likely that one of these people at the bar mitzvah, probably one of these older folk who don't know any better, are going to call him an Oriental. And then of all people, it turns out to be her mom who says it. And then we get this great little, we come back to it later on in the episode where she has discovered the error of her ways. And I can't remember what it is she says. They discover how it's antiquated and xenophobic. And I love that Josh just says, I knew it was something wrong or racist, but I didn't know why. Now I do. I bring it up with you because I don't remember what episode we were talking about of what TV show, probably one of the superhero shows that we talk about. You using that phrase, and I was like, going, I actually remember asking Dan, like, "Hey, do me a favor, cut that out."
I have the honor of being the only one to have something edited out of a show that we've done.
Yeah, I edited you for content because I heard, especially when I heard it back, I was like, "Yeah, I don't. Yeah, we. Yeah, let's cut that." You know, especially to be super honest, I know of at least 2 Asian listeners that are friends of mine who I knew would be like, if they heard that. So I just said, yeah, let's cut that out. You know, just it, there's just some things you got to be careful about.
Yeah, it was an Arrow season 4 show.
Oh, that's right. It was Arrow. Oh, they probably didn't listen to that one then. Okay, good. Okay, Eric, just wanted to get that out of the way right off the bat. But speaking of people of the Asian persuasion, I have a feeling you were happy to see this because I think it's the only one of these 5 episodes he appears in. Father Bra shows up.
Yeah, Father Bra.
I love Father Bra. He's great. We just get little doses of him from time to time. But he's another one of my favorite little characters on the show.
Yeah, he's one of those characters that it's great in small doses, and it might be okay for him to have like a whole episode dedicated to himself, but he would not fit in for a season-long commitment. If you know what I'm saying.
No, just show it wouldn't make sense, right? Yeah, I think, but that's what makes him work so well. He's kind of acts as a sort of like a guide, conscience, whatever for Josh. Although Josh doesn't really ever seem to listen to him or really pay any attention to what he tells him, mm-hmm. Which kind of reminds us of someone else on the show, Rebecca. So the whole point of this episode was that Josh goes with Rebecca. Stays at her mother's house. So Rebecca goes through that whole situation again. But and it's the whole stuff of him being at the bar mitzvah with her, and the fact that her whole plan was she was primed to basically be there to mock, to look at how dark and miserable and you know whatever everyone was, and just make fun of people. And it doesn't really work that way with Josh.
It doesn't. Matter of fact, he fits right in. He loves it there. He loves her family. The mother loves him. The mother who doesn't love anything.
Now, do you get the feeling that when she goes as far as to say something like that and why she's upset with him, doesn't it kind of sound like she wants Josh to be Greg? Because she said she wants to sit in a corner with him and laugh at how miserable everyone else is.
Yes.
She wants a Greg-like personality, which is not Josh's personality. Why she would in any way, shape, or form think Josh would be that way doesn't make a lot of sense because there's nothing about his character which is like that. He doesn't do that. He doesn't.
No, and he's never has.
Yeah. So I believe it in this instance because it goes to Rebecca's tendency to be delusional or be in denial about things. And I think you'd agree that she's had a number of different types of denial when it comes to Josh, the fact that maybe Josh might not be the best fit for her or not, because based on any number of things, which now this new character is making her slowly see, I think, is a problem. But she's talking about someone who would be cynical. And there's one thing that Josh is not. Josh is not cynical. He's the complete polar opposite of that. So it's very strange that she would want that to be the case.
Exactly. And it's the whole reason why she moved out there to California. It was because the first shot that she saw in New York of him was a light shining down on him, which is the opposite of cynicism. It's hope.
Right.
You know, and, you know, maybe she's slipping back because she was in New York, that she slipped back into that. Oh. That phrase where she was cynical and drab and dreary.
Although, I feel I need to say something. I'm going to say a few things here. Or back and forth here. Her East Coast, West Coast analogy about the dark and the light, whatever, kind of made me cringe a little bit. I was getting kind of annoyed with her about that. Not as much as some of the Jewish stuff that was done in this episode, because, yes, I do feel I need to comment on that, because, you know, the whole technically I'm Jewish kind of thing, so I feel I have carte blanche in this area. It's funny because on one hand, I really love this episode. Doesn't mean I might not have little issues with it, but I kind of let them go for the most part. But it still bugs me a little bit. And, you know, I know that the actress, Rachel Bloom, obviously, you know, she's Jewish. I'm sure other people connected to the show, I don't know if their co-writer is as well. Who knows? Don't care. Here's a couple of my little issues I had with it. Some are like nitpicky, and some are bigger. Nitpicky would be something like this, and I mentioned this even on a Facebook thread at one point, that they're at the bar mitzvah, which is, we're talking about the party, you know, the place where people eat or have fun or dance, whatever, and they act like it's a requirement that all the men, at least, should be wearing the yarmulkes. That ain't the way it works. You don't need to be wearing that at this function. You only need to be wearing that at the actual ceremony, when the kid is going through the actual bar mitzvah, which is in a synagogue, not at the party. There is no requirement that you have to wear the headdress. The only people who would normally be wearing that would be people who are Orthodox. I say this because over the last, from like between 2007 and 2013, I went to, God help me, several bar mitzvahs in Long Island, in rich parts of Long Island, no less. Never saw that happen. So I speak with knowledge on this topic for a change, believe it or not. Speaking of which, the fact that this is in Scarsdale, and whatever, so we get the impression these are people with money, you know, and it's at this nice home, whatever. I went along with it because, you know, yes, I'm sure maybe occasionally they might be like this. But here's the thing, in this day and age, bar mitzvahs, especially Long Island bar mitzvahs, they're like these ridiculously extravagant affairs. I mean, they spend ungodly amounts of money, and they rent out these places to accommodate, you know, tons of people. You know, they treat bar mitzvahs like their weddings, practically. That's the way they treat them, with the money they spend, the lavishness of it, and so on. The fact that, and these are actually supposed to be people who are like really well-to-do, and I kept thinking, seems like it's kind of a low-budget affair. I mean, I know it's in someone's house, but big freaking deal. That's not the way you normally do this. The only thing I could think of, if they actually tried to stage a bar mitzvah the way they really tend to happen in Long Island nowadays, it would probably blow the budget of this show, quite frankly, because it tends to be so ridiculously over the top. And again, I went to not just one or two, I went to several different members of different families, whatever, and except for the food, kind of hated the experience, but all of them, different places, but they were all had that in common. So that's just kind of a thing now, and I think they kind of didn't get that quite right. Do I care? Not so much, because it didn't really bother me. It didn't affect the show at all. The thing that kind of starts to bother me a little bit is when they start preying on cliches that I don't feel hold up very well, or things that just don't make a lot of sense to me. there was a moment in a previous episode where Rebecca is confused about when she's ordering the soup for Josh in the Soup Fairy episode, and she's confused about there not being matzo balls in the chicken soup. That bothered me a little bit because while there are some Jewish mothers who do make chicken soup with matzo balls, that's by far not a requirement of any Jewish mother's chicken soup. But I let it go because I said, well, maybe that was the way her mother cooked it. And that's, it's okay. It's fine. It's just like I don't accept another kind of meatloaf because I only accept the way my mother made it. So when I have it somewhere, I was like, that's not meatloaf. That's not the way my mother made it. So I went along with it. But they do kind of... the whole her whole perception of Jews being just miserable and whatever all the time started to wear on me a little bit. Although the song is so great, it makes up for it. The song is by far one of my favorite songs of this season, or both seasons, quite frankly. And I think why I like the song more than I liked the straight non-singing representation of Jews here, it kind of made me think of like Mel Brooks, how Mel Brooks can make fun of Jews all the live long day, I don't mind, because it's always so over the top and heightened in his comedies, it doesn't matter. Whereas in this, it was kind of done at a very normal, almost dramatic level until that song happens, and then you can be silly and over the top, if that makes any sense.
It makes perfect sense to me. And you have to admit, I mean, that song was fantastic, and I think what's her name, Tova Feldshuh, who plays
her mom,
who plays her mom, and Patti LuPone, they do an outstanding singing of the song.
Patti LuPone is, I mean, she's one of the best regarded musical actresses of the last 40 years. I mean, she was a Vita. So the fact they got her to do this was truly awesome. It was great that Patti LuPone was in this episode.
You have to think about it. This is, you know, just another great little cameo that they've thrown in there. Well, I guess it's more than a cameo. I mean, just a great guest star.
Yes.
That the show is able to get. And I think they do just an excellent job with it. But that song, I think it's probably the second best of the season. Behind Greg's drinking song, which that constantly cracks me up. But I don't think I'll ever get that song will ever get old with me. But you know, I have to agree with you. It's really good.
Was the threesome song from this season or last season? Oh, it was last season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, you're right. Okay, I they kind of fused together in my mind. So yeah, I can see that. So I love the song number. I quoted it on my Facebook page. Spoiler, y'all might be hearing that song a little bit later on this podcast, because that's how I'm going to end the podcast. But yeah, I loved it. I mean, I truly, in many ways, really enjoyed or loved a lot of this episode. I think I didn't mind the Daryl Nathaniel stuff as much as you did. Maybe I bought into it a little bit more. I only had like one regret, like genuine regret with this episode, is that at this point now we've had two episodes in a row where I think Paula was kind of relegated to either Rebecca helper status once again, the way she used to be, or pretty much nothing. Cause I don't know if she did anything in this episode, if I recall.
I don't think she did.
And the reason it bothers me is because there's so much going on with her.
Right. Her husband's gone.
She kicked her husband out. Her son left. So there's all the law school stuff, you know, the stuff with her bracelet buddy at school. You know, there's like all these things going on with Paula, and we just kind of just like, we're going to put that aside for a couple episodes. Like, no, I'm interested. She's awesome. Give me more of that. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Especially since you just got out of the arc where they had been separated for so long.
Yes, exactly. You'd think, but I mean, I'm sure we'll get more stuff with Paula in the subsequent episodes. But at this point, I'm kind of like, give me more Paula again. You know, she's so nice when she's actually tweeted back to us once or twice, sort of, kind of, not exactly. But anyway, also speaking of songs, because the Remember That We Suffered song is truly terrific. And as hopefully you heard a little while ago, we did get our third time hearing period sex, this time from her mom, which was beautifully, embarrassingly creepy for her to hear, I'm sure. But we also got We'll Never Have Problems Again.
Yes.
I think I liked it even more because I watched it the second time. I liked it even more the second time around. That's a really good song.
It is. It speaks to a lot of the self-delusion that those two have about their future together and how it's like there's a big flashing sign like there's problems here. Like when you start doing stuff like that, that's an issue.
Yeah, and I also like the fact that we're in these subsequent episodes, as much as I'm kind of iffy on him at times, you're starting to realize that Josh has these issues of denial or delusion as well. Maybe not to the crazy extent, so to speak, that Rebecca has, but like even when he's talking to her mother, and he kind of pointedly says, like, I really need this relationship to work out because he's told so many people. He's all about the perception. He's all about that. And earlier in previous episodes, the fact, I think it was White Josh who points out that he was single for all of what, 11 minutes or something like, or some joke, 11 minutes, 11 days, whatever it was, that Josh seems to keep needing some sort of relationship in order to, I don't know, self-validate or identify or something. So he's got some issues too. He's just blissfully up to a point unaware of them, but he's definitely got some issues going on.
Mm-hmm. I think this is the second best song about insecurity since Once More with Feelings, I'll Never Tell from Buffy.
Yes. Oh, wow. Didn't think we'd make a Buffy reference here. But yeah, the song, the fact that it's got that whole poppy disco feel, you know, they do a routine, like they look like they're performing on Soul Train or something like that. And yes. I just want to point out the one lyric that's truly needs to be pointed out, that late in the song, Rebecca actually says, now for once, the situation's a lot less nuanced than that, which means they're poking fun or making a reference to the season one theme song for the show, which is pretty awesome that they did that. So keep your ears open. You hear that? That's pretty awesome.
It is. It's very awesome. And once again, Heather comes on and says something.
Yes. Oh, Heather.
Wise and sage. And then she soul trains on out of there, as she said.
I think I actually am disappointed if Miss Douche doesn't show up in every episode, because I think she's a presence that needs to be in every episode, quite frankly. Is that her title for her new job? Is it Miss Douche?
Yes, Miss Douche. Yes.
Oh, it's so good. All right. I like the fact that the last episode we talked about definitely was a really great episode, I think, in many ways. Despite, even though it sounded like I was kind of being hard on it, I wasn't really being that serious about the Jewish stuff. I mean, we're known for our senses of humor, don't you know? Anyway. So, let's finish up here with the episodes, but I do want to spend just a couple more minutes on the show in general as far as speculating on what's to come. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions here, Jason.
Okay.
You ready? And these might be one-word answers, or you may go a little longer. Keep in mind, we've been recording for over an hour and 40 minutes, so maybe we want to wrap up. Up to you. So much for, we're going to do like an hour and 17 minutes again, I'm sure. Anyway, are Josh and Rebecca, are they a good couple? Or are they just clearly ultimately doomed no matter what?
I think they're ultimately doomed no matter what, because just from that, what I was talking about with the song, We'll Never Have Problems Again. It's like that's not the case. I mean, you are never truly out of problems. Something new will always come up, and they will have to deal with it.
Okay, so my follow-up, therefore, is do you think they are at least remain together by the end of the season, or do you think they're broken up by the end of the season? We've only got three episodes now to go.
It would be hard to justify them breaking up again, but you feel like that's the way it's going to go since they've been together, broken up, and back together again.
Right.
All in this season alone, it's just a little too much for 13 episodes. But, you know, I could see them breaking them up again at the end. like she'll have some kind of revelation that she was going down when she was talking to the therapist, and the therapist was getting all excited. She was actually getting up out of her chair until Josh comes barging in with the ring that she pawned.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I totally regret not bringing that up, because one of my favorite things about the episode was, oh my God, wait a minute. Did Rebecca learn something? Because, hey, newsflash about the show, in case anyone hasn't been paying attention, characters don't learn a lot. They have their moments, and you think, oh, maybe that character has made some progress. Well, usually Rebecca. And then you realize, no, they're quick to regress. And
they slip back in.
They slip, yeah, slip back. She relapses and regresses all the time, you know, and she's done it again. And then by the end of the episode, in a big way. But it was the first time she was actually shown that she is aware of what her problems are, and the therapist is so excited. So and then Josh comes in and fucks it all up.
He does his Josh thing.
My feeling is that I'm assuming between now and the end of the season, she's going to cheat on Josh with the Nathaniel character. I think they seem to be building up to that. So I don't know if she'll have officially broken up with him by the end of the season, or she'll have done something where it's weighing on her, and so a breakup is looming or something along those lines. Only because if they really do break up again, it's going to be, in the same season. They might be able to pull it off, but it will seem a lot of back and forth and back and forth and back and forth all in one season. So I'm going to say that I think the breakup is looming because she's tortured by guilt or whatever, or feelings for someone else or that kind of thing. But I'm going to say maybe they don't necessarily actually fully break up by the end of the season. Not just yet. Maybe be like that kind of a cliffhanger-y kind of a thing.
Yeah. And Rebecca, wouldn't be the first time that Rebecca's done something by sleeping with a guy when she was dating another guy.
Right.
Because she did it to Greg.
Speaking of which, I don't know anything. I haven't looked up anything. I haven't read anything. I don't know. Any chance you think we'll see Greg again?
Maybe not this year. I actually had to look it up, and he, on his IMDb, it's got his showing as 2016. So it's not, he's not going to show up this year unless it's at the very, very end.
All right. Spoiler. No, I'm just kidding. there's always a chance he could show up again in season 3, I guess, since now we know there's going to be a season 3.
Yes, and I would like to have him back. Frankly, I love his songs. He was my favorite of the songs from last year, and even this year as well.
I'm torn because he was one of my favorite characters, and I totally related to him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, in many ways, they kind of gave him a great way to leave the show. And would it negate like that great final song about, you know, it was a shit show, if I recall?
Yes, that was it.
I mean, you don't get a much more awesome way to leave a show with a musical number than that. So I'm okay if he doesn't come back, but I do kind of miss him. And maybe I would just like to know what he's up to. Maybe I would just like to know what, because we were never clear exactly what his aspirations were going to lead to. They were always kind of murky about that. I'd like to know what it is he's doing. What is he studying? What is it he's going to become? I am a little curious about it. Not that he would have gotten to that point in such a short amount of time, but no, I wouldn't mind him showing, at least making an appearance in one episode just to, you know, just to see him again, I think.
And they have a great opportunity to bring him back just by killing his father, because his father's sick.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I guess that's true. All right. I think we need to wrap this sucker up.
Because, on that somber note?
Yes. We went longer than I thought, but whatever. It's fine. We talked about 5 episodes. So if you enjoyed this podcast, you would probably enjoy our Facebook page as well. You can find us on Facebook as the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can like the page and join the conversation about shows like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, as well as other shows both on the CW and far higher quality shows too, like the upcoming Better Call Saul, Fargo, and so on. You can also find us on iTunes in the very same fashion. Type in the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. 5-star ratings are always appreciated. It would be nice to get some ratings this year because we got very few last year.
Yeah.
And finally, you can also follow us on the Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. I will tweet links to the show, but occasionally I might put out the comment or two. I probably shouldn't say it's me, but everyone knows it's me. Come on. And every once in a blue moon, I actually get someone to respond or at least like or retweet one of our things, which I guess has happened a couple times with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. It didn't happen with the one I did the other day, so maybe they're ignoring me now. I don't know. But, you know, it's always worth a shot.
Sad.
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 Yeah, I love that we're recording this on the eve of Armageddon. Anyway. Jason, I'm glad that you were able to make time to do this special podcast with me.
Thank you.
We both love the show. I know you especially adore it.
Mm-hmm. Just want to say this particular podcast has now been done 154 times. Not all at once, because that would be crazy. And not all by me either.
What? Wait.
But
excuse me. What number is it?
I think it's 154, right? No. Is it 154?
No, you blew it.
Oh my God. 153?
It's 153.
Okay, 153 times. Well, you know, it like you said, it is like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, I know. I had our podcast page up in front of me, which has them all lined up, and I knew what the number was. And I said, I know he's gonna mess it up because I keep forgetting what it is, quite frankly.
The number is getting so big.
Yeah. Well, there's also a confusing factor because there was one podcast which I thought I had actually labeled as number zero, but apparently it's still part of the mix, so it didn't change that. I don't understand. I don't know. Anyway, ramble.
Yes, I ruined my own joke. So 153 times, but not all at the same time.
Right. Anyway, I look forward to recording with you next week about our superhero crap, and then again, me and you will get together for the final Crazy Ex-Girlfriend podcast at some point in early February.
I like it.
Okay. And with that, good night to everybody. And good night to you, Jason.
Hey, good night, everybody. Good night, Scott.
Celebrate, grab a drink and fix a plate. But before you feel too great, remember that we suffered. Nights like these are filled with glee, noshing, dancing, singing, wee. But we sing in a minor key to remember that we suffered.
Being happy is selfish, remember that we suffered.
You have no idea what pain is,
remember that we suffered.
Hey! I mean, would it be such a crime for the Beastie Boys or Haim to mention in their songs one time, remember that we suffered?
I don't want to bring up the Holocaust. I know the Holocaust, but the Holocaust was a really big deal.
Remember that we suffered.
This DJ is terrific.
Remember that we suffered.
My grandma's a survivor.
Remember that she suffered.
We
suffer.
I can't hear you.
Remember.